Nothing wrong with magnificent homes, fast cars, and lots of money. I really, really need you to hear me on that, please. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. As the old saying goes, having plenty of money is what life wants for you. Abundance is nature's way. There's no scarcity of flowers, lemon trees, and stars in the sky. Money allows you to do superb things for yourself and for the people you care most about. And it offers you the chance to help those in need. A tourist water skiing behind a speedboat zoomed by. You could hear him laughing with glee. "I'll let you in on a little secret," the magnate continued. "I've given away most of my vast liquid fortune. Yes, I still have the jets and the Zurich flat and this oceanside place. And though my business interests are still valued at an amount that makes me a billionaire, I need none of it. I'm not attached to any of this."
"I read a story that I think you'll like," shared the artist. "Kurt Vonnegut, the writer, and Joseph Heller, the author of Catch-22, were at a party hosted by a renowned financier on Long Island. Vonnegut asked his companion how it felt to know that their host made more money in the day before the gala than he had made from all royalties of his best-selling book. Heller replied, "I've got something he can never have." Vonnegut asked, "What on earth could that be, Joe?" Heller's reply was priceless. "The knowledge that I've got enough."
"Brilliant!" enthused the billionaire. "Love it!" He shouted inappropriately loudly as he high-fived the artist. He then performed the little dance he loved to do when he was happy yet again, before launching into a series of jumping jacks. His eyes were closed as he did them. Such an oddball. The artist went on talking.
"Anyway, I understand what you're teaching us on this point about capitalization and the self-fulfilling prophecy. No one will believe in our ability to do great things until we first believe in our greatness, and then put in the sincere and rigorous effort to realize it. You know what Pablo Picasso once said?"
"Tell us, please," implored the entrepreneur, her stance showing that she was very open in this instant.
"Picasso announced, 'My mother said to me, if you are a soldier, you will become a general. If you are a monk, you will become the Pope. Instead, I was a painter and became Picasso.'"
"Gnarly, man," the billionaire remarked. "Now that's faith and confidence in one's potential." The billionaire ran a fist along his tanned chin, looking down at the white sand for a moment. "And it's not only our parents who are responsible for the limited programs most people are running through their minds during the finest hours of their greatest days. Like I suggested, many well-meaning yet unaware teachers reinforce the idea that the heroic geniuses of the arts, sciences, sports, and humanities are special, and that we need to accept that we are ordinary, incapable of producing towering work that leaves people breathless by its excellence and generating a life that is matchless. And then we have the association of our friends and relentless messaging of the media supporting the same facts. Essentially, it all becomes this consistent hypnotization where, without us even knowing it, the once blazing fire of genius within us grows dimmer, and the once passionate voices of possibility get quieter. We minimize our abilities and begin a lifelong process of playing small with our powers and constructing prisons around our strengths. We stop behaving as leaders, creative producers, and possibilitarians, and we start acting as victims. Disappointing what happens to so many good people, and most of us can't see this brainwashing away from our best selves happening, reflected the entrepreneur.
Yep, responded the billionaire.
Even worse, the potential unexpressed turns to pain. I need to emphasize.
What do you mean by that?
Wondered the artist, turning his eyes away and shifting his posture somewhat nervously.
Maybe I'm sabotaging creating art as original and exceptional as the great masters did, because I've avoided capitalizing on my potential for so long that I'm hurting deep inside, the artist thought to himself.
Well, our noblest selves know the truth. Each of us are built to do astonishing things with our human gifts and materialize astounding feats with our productive talents. The word astonish is actually derived from the Latin word extenere, which means to leave someone thunderstruck. Every single person alive today carries the capacity deep within their hearts and spirits to do this. The more we decrease the volume of our unhealthy narrative, which, neurobiologically speaking, is a creation of our limbic system, the more we will hear this sublime call on ourselves to rise up to the blatant expression of our greatest genius. This is true whether you're a supervisor within a large organization, a programmer in a small cubicle, a teacher in a school, or a chef in a restaurant. You absolutely have the capacity to lift your work to the level of artistry and have an impact for the betterment of humanity. And yet we resign our lives to apathy because of this faulty perception of who we truly are and what we can really accomplish, staying violently stuck in half-alive lives. And here's the really big idea. As we betray our true power, a part of us starts to die, noted the billionaire.
Dramatic insight, acknowledged the artist. I seriously need to make some massive changes. I'm tired of feeling tired and neglecting my creative abilities. I'm beginning to get that I'm special.
You are, affirmed the entrepreneur. You are, she repeated, in a voice of tenderness.
I'm also starting to see that I care too much about what others think. Some of my friends make fun of my paintings, and they say I'm a screwball behind my back. I'm realizing they just don't understand me, and my vision for my art.
Many of the great geniuses of the world were not appreciated until decades after they died, you know? The billionaire offered in a murmur. And on your point about your friends, I'm not so sure you're surrounding yourself with the right ones. And maybe now it's time to do you rather than limiting your talent and aliveness because you are seduced by the opinions of others. Kurt Cobain said it better than I ever could. I was tired of pretending that I was someone else just to get along with people, just for the sake of having friendships.
Hmm, was the artist's only response.
What I'm sharing is accurate. We become our associations. And you'll never have a positive influence in your field and make a beautiful life if you hang with negative people, continued the billionaire. Oh, and that pain I was just speaking of, if not attended to and released, starts to form a deep reservoir of fear and self-hatred within us. Most of us don't have the awareness or possess the tools to process through this well of suppressed anguish. Most of us are unconscious to this quiet torment created by the disrespect we have shown to our promise. And so, we deny it if someone even suggests it. We flee from it when presented with an opportunity to manifest it. And we subconsciously develop a series of soul-crushing escape routes to avoid feeling this pain generated by our talents denied.
Like what? Quizzed the entrepreneur.
Addictions. Like constantly checking for messages or scanning for likes. Or spending vast chunks of our daily lives watching too much television. TV shows have become so superb these days. It's so easy to get hooked. And when one episode ends, on some viewing platforms, the next one begins automatically. Many among us also make flights from their greatness by chatting and gossiping endlessly, not really understanding that there's a staggering difference between being busy and being productive. High-impact performers and genuine world-builders aren't very available to whoever seeks their attention and demands their time. They're hard to reach, waste few moments, and are far more focused on doing real work versus artificial work. So they deliver the breathtaking results that advance our world. Other avoidance tactics from the pain of potential unexpressed are hours mindlessly surfing online, electronic shopping, working too much, drinking too much, eating too much, complaining too much, and sleeping too much.
The tycoon sipped from his water bottle. Another fishing boat motored by. The woman who captained it waved to Mr. Riley, who bowed mightily in reply.
The spellbinder calls this whole phenomenon learned victimhood, the billionaire carried on in a wonderfully exuberant way. As we leave our youth, there's a pull toward complacency. We can start to coast, settle for what's familiar, and lose the juicy desire to expand our frontiers. We adopt the paradigm of a victim. We make excuses and then recite them so many times, we train our subconscious mind to think they are true. We blame other people and outer conditions for our struggles, and we condemn past events for our private wars. We grow cynical and lose the curiosity, wonder, compassion, and innocence we knew as kids. We become apathetic, critical, hardened. Within this personal ecosystem the majority of us create for ourselves, mediocrity then becomes acceptable. And because this mindset is running within us each day, the viewpoint seems so very real to us. We truly believe that the story we are running reveals the truth, because we're so close to it. So rather than showing leadership in our fields, owning our crafts by producing dazzling work and handcrafting delicious lives, we resign ourselves to average. See how it all happens? Yes, at least it's all becoming clearer. So the key is to re-script our personal story, right? Inquired the entrepreneur. Absolutely, confirmed the billionaire. Every time you become aware of yourself dropping into victim mode and make a more courageous choice, you rewrite the narrative. You raise your self-identity, elevate your self-respect, and enrich your self-confidence. Each time you vote for your superior self, you starve your weaker side and feed your inherent power. And as you do this with the consistency demanded by mastery, your capitalization IQ, that is your ability to materialize whatever gifts you've been born with, will only grow. The billionaire invited his two students to move to the terrace of his home to continue the morning's lesson on the four focuses of history makers. History maker focus number two, freedom from distraction. The billionaire pointed to the model with a pinky finger. Remember that important brain tattoo of successful people? An addiction to distraction is the death of your creative production. It will guide us through this section of today's mentoring session, and I've decided to go deep into the importance of winning the war against diversion and cyber nuisances, because it's an extremely serious issue in our culture. In some ways, the new technologies and social media are not only eroding the Everests of our glorious productive potential, they are also training us to be less human. We have fewer real conversations, fewer true connections, and fewer meaningful interactions. Yes, I'm realizing this more and more as the mornings pass on this beach, admitted the entrepreneur. Filling valuable hours with meaningless moves is the drug of choice for most people, the billionaire continued. Intellectually, we know we shouldn't be wasting time on zero-value activities, but emotionally, we just can't beat the temptation. We just can't fight the hook. This behavior is costing organizations billions of dollars in lost productivity and deficient quality. And as I suggested earlier, people are making more mistakes in their work than ever before, because they aren't present to what they're doing. Their precious concentration has been hijacked by a foolish use of technology, and their priceless focus has been kidnapped, costing them their chance to create their best work and calibrate their finest lives. The stillness and quietude that only the day's earliest hours provide was still evident. The industrialist paused. He scanned the entire scene, gazing at the flowers neatly ordered around his home, then at the cargo ships on the horizon that looked like they hadn't moved, and finally at the ocean. "Look, cats," he said at last. "I love the modern world. I really do. Without all the technology we have available to us, life would be a lot harder. My businesses wouldn't be as successful as they are. I wouldn't be as efficient as I am, and I possibly wouldn't be here with you two." "Why?" wondered the artist, as a single dolphin swam by gracefully. Astoundingly, it then soared high out of the ocean and spun in the air four times, before returning to the water with a lavish splash. Mr. Riley looked delighted. "I'm so happy I discovered how to become a magnet for miracles," he whispered to himself. "And I can't wait to teach these good folks how to do the same for themselves." He then kept on with his discourse.
All the innovations in healthcare tech saved my life when I was sick, the billionaire explained. Anywho, technology well used is a phenomenal thing. It's all the silly ways people apply it now that really concerns me. So many potentially outstanding people are suffering from broken focus syndrome because they fill their professional and personal lives with so many gadgets, interruptions, and cyber noise. If you're in the sport of winning, please model all of the great masters of history and strip away all the layers of complexity from your days. Simplify. Streamline everything. Become a purist. Less really is more. Concentrate on just a few work projects so you make them amazing, versus diluting your attention on too many. And socially, have fewer friends but go deep with them so the relationship is rich. Accept fewer invitations, major in fewer leisure activities, and study, then master a smaller number of books versus skimming many. An intense concentration only on what matters most is how the pros realize victory. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Stop managing your time and start managing your focus, added the billionaire. Now there's a principle for greatness in this overstimulated society we live in.
Thanks to your teaching so far, said the artist, I now understand that being busy doesn't mean you're being productive. I've also come to see that when I work on a new painting, the closer I get to great art, the more some darker part of me wants to get me distracted so that I avoid doing something mind-blowing. It happens fairly often now that I think about it. I'll get nearer to fantastic work, and I then begin to break my work routine. I'll go online and just surf. I'll sleep later and watch entire seasons of my favorite shows, or play video games with my virtual friends all night. Sometimes, I'll just drink too much cheap red wine.
The closer you get to your genius, the more you'll face the sabotage of your fears, agreed the billionaire powerfully. You'll become scared of leaving the majority and having to deal with the byproducts of mastery, like being different from most people, jealousy from competitors, and the pressure to make your next project even better. As you rise toward virtuosity, you'll become anxious about failure, threatened by a concern of not being good enough and insecure about blazing new paths. So your amygdala, an almond-shaped mass of gray matter in the brain that detects fear, gets all fired up, and you begin to tear down the productivity you've built up. We all have a subconscious saboteur that lurks within our weakest selves, you know? The good news is that once you become aware of this condition,
I can make the better daily choices that will give me better daily results, the artist interrupted, with all the energy of a puppy seeing its owner after a long day alone.
Exactly, said the billionaire. Once you are aware of the fact that as you near your highest talents and most luminous gifts, the scared side of you will rear its ugly head and try to mess up the masterpieces you've been creating by pursuing every distraction and escape route possible to avoid finishing, you can manage that self-destructive behavior. You can step outside of it. You can't disempower it, simply by watching its attempts to denounce your mastery.
Really profound insights here, contributed the entrepreneur. This explains so much about why I'm limiting my productivity, performance, and influence at my company. I'll set an important target. I get the team enrolled in it. We sequence the key deliverables. Then I get distracted. I'll say yes to another opportunity that adds more complexity to our business. I'll fill my days with useless meetings with people who love to hear the sound of their own voice. I'll check my notifications obsessively and watch breaking news reports religiously. This morning it's become super clear how I'm totally sabotaging my effectiveness. It's also pretty obvious that I am addicted to the digital nonsense you're speaking about. I'll be honest, I haven't gotten over some of my exes because it's so easy to watch their lives on social media. I'm understanding now that a lot of the hours I could be super creative, I trade for online recreation. Like you said, Mr. Riley, it's a form of escape. I can't seem to stop shopping on my devices. It's just too easy. And it makes me feel happy for a few minutes. I'm getting why Steve Jobs didn't give his kids the very things he sold to the world. He understood how addictive they could be if improperly used, and how they could make us less human and less alive. The billionaire raised a hand. Another assistant sprinted from the beach hut up to the now sun-soaked terrace. He wore a crisp white shirt, charcoal gray sailing shorts, and well-cared-for black leather sandals.
"Here you are, sir,"
the young man said with a French accent, as he handed the mogul a tray with mysterious markings on it. In the center was a model of the human brain.
"Merci beaucoup, Pierre.
Now, let's explore the neuroscience of self-sabotage, so you cats can understand it better, and then beat it. Remember, each of us has what the Spellbinder calls the ancient brain. This is made up of the limbic system, a set of brain structures that sit on both sides of the thalamus, right under the cerebrum. The amygdala that I mentioned a few moments ago is part of this. This basic and lower functioning brain served to keep us safe thousands of years ago in a primitive world of relentless threats like starvation, temperature extremes, warring tribes, and saber-toothed tigers. It functions to do one main thing: maintain a steady state while warning us against dangers so we survive and propagate our species. With me so far? Asked the billionaire politely.
Understood. The entrepreneur and the artist responded in unison, as a housekeeper served fresh lemon tea with some chunks of ginger in it.
Excellent. One of the fascinating traits of our ancient brain is its negativity bias. To keep us safe, it's far less interested in what's positive in our environment, and significantly more invested in letting us know what's bad. This brain's default is to hunt for danger, the billionaire continued happily. So back when life was much more brutal, we could respond swiftly and stay alive. That mechanism served our ancestors exceedingly well. But in today's world, most of us don't face death daily. The reality is that the ordinary person lives a higher quality life than most members of royalty did, even just a few hundred years ago. Please think about this blessing.
The tycoon slurped some tea.
And yet, because of this built-in negativity bias within our ancient brains, we're constantly scanning for breaches against our security. We're in hyper-vigilance mode, mostly anxious and uptight, even when everything's going great. Fascinating, right?
Explains a lot of why we think the way we do, noted the entrepreneur as she too enjoyed the tea.
Now I see why I always seem to feel I've never achieved enough, even though I've accomplished more than anyone I know, the entrepreneur carried on. I have such a successful business, a robust net worth, and before my investors got greedy, a fairly wonderful life. Yet despite everything I have, my brain seems to always focus on what I'm missing, where I don't have enough, and how I'm falling short of expectations around winning. Drives me crazy. I hardly feel any peace. Ever.
The entrepreneur crossed her arms. The artist blew her a kiss as his dreadlocks dangled in the fragrant breeze.
Theodore Roosevelt said something I think it's important you hear, expounded the billionaire.
What did he say? Inquired the entrepreneur, her arms clenched tightly.
Comparison is the thief of joy, responded the billionaire. Someone will always have more fortune, fame, and stuff than you do. Think about my earlier point about detachment and embracing the wisdom of knowing when enough is enough.
Yes, I remember, said the entrepreneur courteously.
More and more of this hunger you have comes from deeper feelings of scarcity, and a lot of this is stemming from the workings of your ancient brain. It's scanning your environment and the negativity bias is being activated, preventing you from enjoying all the good you have. Okay, said the billionaire. Let's go even more granular. As time advanced, our brains evolved, and the prefrontal cortex developed. This is the part of our brain responsible for higher thinking. Neuroscientists consider it the crown jewel of advanced reasoning. The Spellbinder calls it the mastery brain. But here's the thing. As we begin to dream bigger, learn quicker, and raise our levels of creativity, productivity, and performance, the ancient brain and the mastery brain began a conflict.
They went to war. The primitive brain senses our growth, knows we're leaving our safe harbor of the known, and gets fired up because we're leaving our traditional ways of being. It senses the threat, even though the threat is essential to our personal ascension and professional advancement. We absolutely must venture into those unexplored places where possibility lives, to become more intimate with our primal genius and to become all we are meant to be. Knowing we have higher reaches of talent and courage left to visit floods a human heart with immense excitement. This knowledge is one of the vast treasures that make life worth living. The celebrated psychologist Abraham Maslow once stated, "If you plan on being anything less than who you are capable of being, you will probably be unhappy all the days of your life." But the amygdala kicks into high gear as we exit what's familiar and try something new. The vagus nerve gets provoked, the fear hormone cortisol gets released, and we begin to destroy the very intentions and implementations that our mastery brain so intelligently wants us to realize.
"This explains why so few people are highly creative and extremely productive," the artist observed. "As we leave our comfort zones, the ancient brain gets triggered. As we raise our expertise and lift our influence, it gets frightened by the change."
"Exactly," applauded Mr. Riley. "Then cortisol is released, our perception narrows, our breathing grows shallow, and we drop into fight-or-flight mode. Actually, the three options of fear are flight, fight, or freeze." The artist added,
"Our higher thinking wants us to grow, evolve, do more masterful work, lead better lives, and inspire the world," continued the artist. "But there's a battle of our brains going on, and the ancient, lower, more primitive brain inside all of us wants to stop our evolution."
"Exactly," said the billionaire as he fist-bumped the painter. "And so, speaking to the second focus of history makers on the model you're walking us through, freedom from distraction, I guess it's because of this fear we face that we embrace as many diversions as possible to make us feel better, even if only for a minute?" questioned the entrepreneur.
"Truth," confirmed the billionaire.
"And to escape the discomfort that comes with us becoming more intimate with our inherent genius."
"This is such a big piece for me." The artist couldn't contain his enthusiasm. "You've just walked us through why our culture is so addicted to distractions, and why the majority don't experience their greatness. And I guess that's why creative and productive people are the real warriors of our society. We not only have to face the insults of our naysayers and the arrows of those critics who don't understand our art, we also need to have the guts to push past the alarm bells of our ancient brains, pleading with us not to reach for our brilliance."
"Poetically said, my friend," exclaimed the billionaire gleefully. He did that little dance again. The housekeeper, who was sweeping the veranda, just shook her head. "It takes an awesome amount of courage to feel the terror of true personal and professional growth, and to keep going, even when you sort of feel you're dying," taught the Titan. "But continuing when you're frightened is how you become a legend. You two cats are makers, builders of great things, and all builders consistently break through their fear, daily, to find higher levels of prowess, impact, and human freedom. Oh, and the fantastic reward you'll receive as you fully express your strengths and gifts isn't only the product of your heroic efforts. It's who you'll become by advancing through the fire of your fears and the heat of your trials along the process to mastery. You get to know who you are. You see your abilities more clearly. Your confidence soars. You need the stroking of the crowd a lot less. And you begin to live your authentic life versus a plastic one, manufactured by a world that doesn't want you to be free." The billionaire sipped from his water bottle before continuing to explain the importance of breaking free from the death grip of device distraction and digital diversions. "And that's where being a member of the 5 a.m. Club can also work its magic for you," he told his audience of two. "One of the ways the great men and women of the world avoided complexity was by incorporating tranquility and serenity into the front part of their days.
This beautiful discipline gave them absolutely essential time away from overstimulation to savor life itself, replenish their creative reservoirs, develop their supreme selves, count their blessings and ground the virtues that they would then live out their days under. Many of the people who fueled the progress of our civilization shared the habit of rising before daybreak.
Could you name a few of those people? Quizzed the entrepreneur.
John Grisham, the famous novelist, for one, replied the billionaire. Other celebrated early risers include Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Georgia O'Keeffe, Frank Lloyd Wright, and Ernest Hemingway, who said that early in the morning there is no one to disturb you, and it is cool or cold, and you come to your work and warm as you write.
Beethoven rose at dawn, said the artist.
The great ones all spent a lot of time alone, offered the billionaire. Solitude, the kind that you can access before the sun comes up, is a force multiplier around your power, expertise, and connection to being human. And your escalation requires your isolation. See, you can be in the world all day long chatting endlessly on your phone about 1,000 senseless things. Or you can change the world by exploiting your talent, refining your skills, and being a light of upliftment that raises us all. But you can't do both. Princeton psychologist Eldar Shafir has used the term cognitive bandwidth to explain the point that we have a limited amount of mental capacity when we rise each morning. And as we give our attention to numerous influences, ranging from the news, messages and online platforms to our families, our work, our fitness, and our spiritual lives, we leave bits of our focus on each activity we pursue. Massively important insight to consider. No wonder most of us have trouble concentrating on important tasks by noon. We've spent our bandwidth. Sophie Leroy, a business professor at the University of Minnesota, calls the concentration we deposit on distraction and other stimuli attention residue. She's found that people are far less productive when they are constantly interrupting themselves by shifting from one task to another throughout the day, because they leave valuable pieces of their attention on too many different pursuits. The solution is exactly what I'm suggesting. Work on one high-value activity at a time, instead of relentlessly multitasking, and do so in a quiet environment. Albert Einstein made the point exquisitely when he wrote, "Only one who devotes himself to a cause with his whole strength and soul can be a true master." For this reason, mastery demands all of a person. This really is one of the most closely guarded secrets of the virtuosos and history makers. They don't diffuse their cognitive bandwidth. They don't dilute their creative gifts, chasing every shiny diversion and every attractive opportunity that comes their way. No, instead, they exercise the fierce discipline required to do only a few things, but at an absolutely world-class level. It's like I said before, the great ones understand that it's far smarter to create one piece of art, a genuine masterpiece, that endures for generations, rather than thousands of projects that express no genius. And please also remember, the hours that the 95% waste, the top 5% treasure. 5 a.m. is the time of least distraction, highest human glory, and greatest peace. So, leverage the victory hour well. You'll make quantum leaps in your productivity, as well as in your personal mastery. I don't want to get too much further into the neuroscience I've shared this morning, and I have an amazing surprise planned. But there is one more concept that I'd love to share with you two. It's called transient hypofrontality.
Transient what-a-what-a? Queried the artist as he laughed.
The billionaire walked over to a towering palm tree with a thick trunk revealing its vast age. A sun-bleached wooden table with a wide circular top sat under it. A model had been meticulously carved into the wood. You would have been most impressed and fascinated if you saw it. The magnate cleared his throat and chugged some of the lemon tea. After a few seconds, he began to gargle. Yes. Gargle. Then he carried on his discourse.
When you're up early and all alone,
away from the overstimulation and noise. Your attention isn't being fragmented by technology, meetings, and other forces that can limit maximum productivity, mused the billionaire. And so the prefrontal cortex, that part of your brain responsible for rational thinking, as well as constant worrying, actually shuts off for a short time. Lovely information, right? That's the transient part of transient hypofrontality. It happens only temporarily. Your nonstop analyzing, ruminating, and stressful overthinking stops. You pause from trying to figure everything out and being so concerned about things that will probably never happen. Your brain waves actually shift from their usual beta to alpha, and sometimes even down into theta state. The solitude, silence, and stillness of daybreak also triggers the production of neurotransmitters like dopamine, the inspirational fuel that serves superproducers so well, and serotonin, the beautiful pleasure drug of the brain. Automatically and naturally, you enter what I described earlier as the flow state. Mr. Riley waved his left hand over the diagram on the table. Entitled The Secret of Morning Genius, it is reproduced on the enhancement. The flow state is the peak mindset that all exceptionalists like top violinists, iconic athletes, elite chefs, brilliant scientists, empire-building entrepreneurs, and legendary leaders inhabit when they produce their finest product, the industrialist added enthusiastically. When you give yourself the gift of some morning peace away from your busyness, the hardwired capacity of every human brain to access the realm of pure genius becomes activated. The excellent news for you two cats is that with the right moves, you can habituate this state of awesome performance so it shows up with absolute predictability. Transient hypofrontality, a very helpful model, declared the entrepreneur as she gingerly placed her phone into her shorts. The entire world would transform if people knew this information, pronounced the artist. They should be teaching all this to kids in schools, the entrepreneur suggested. So true, agreed the billionaire. But again, I need to give all the credit for this philosophy I'm sharing with you, and the transformational methodology that I'll soon walk you through so you implement all this potent information, to the Spellbinder. He's been my greatest teacher, and with zero doubt, the finest human being I know. Ingenuity without integrity isn't so impressive to me. Unusual accomplishment free of uncommon compassion is senseless. And yes, if every person on the planet was educated in this material, and then they had the commitment to apply it, the entire world would be advanced. Because each of us would own and then live our latent power to realize extraordinary results and rise into completely glorious people. History Maker Focus Number 3. Personal Mastery Practice. The billionaire walked his two students past the expansive terrace that offered delightful views of the ocean, around to the front of his house. A black SUV shimmered in the driveway as the rays of the morning sun washed over it. "Where are we going?" asked the entrepreneur. "Well, I promised you both at that dramatic meeting we had at the conference that you would swim with the dolphins if you came to visit me in Mauritius. So I'm delivering on my promise. We're going to the western part of the island, to a small seaside village called Flikonflak. Two young and delightful dudes are waiting there for us. They're skilled at finding where the dolphins are. Get ready to be blown away by what you're about to experience, my friends. This will be unforgettable for you." The SUV was soon veering through the charming pocket-sized towns that surrounded the compound of the industrialist and rolling onto a perfectly kept highway. The billionaire sat in the front with his driver, asking about his children, his latest fascinations, and his aspirations for the future. Throughout the journey, Mr. Riley would ask a thoughtful question, then lean back and listen carefully. One could see he was a man of towering depth, with a mammoth heart. As the vehicle eased up to a lovely harbor, graced by a sandy beach, a few white cottages, a quaint fish restaurant, and many aging boats moored in the water, a rooster proudly sang his morning anthem, and the miraculous sight of a double rainbow unfolded across the magnificent blue sky. Two young fishermen greeted the billionaire with hugs. The group then set off into the vast Indian Ocean, searching for a school of dolphins they could swim and play with. The song Strength of a Woman by Jamaican singer Shaggy blasted from an inexpensive speaker roughly installed into the side of the boat with gray duct tape. The spray coming off the motorboat as it struck the waves soaked the faces of the billionaire, the entrepreneur, and the artist, making them giggle like children dancing in puddles left after the rain. After a few attempts, dolphins were spotted swimming jubilantly in a small cove surrounded by soaring cliffs, the kind you'd see along the Pacific Coast Highway in California. The way those creatures rejoiced as they glided through the ocean would make you feel as if there were 1,000 of them in that little inlet, but there were only about 11 or so. The billionaire threw on a diving mask and quickly slipped into the water from a platform at the back of the motorboat. "Come on, cats," he said excitedly. "Let's go." The entrepreneur went in next, her eyes alive and her heart beating with an elation she hadn't accessed since her youth. Her breathing sounded shallow and rapid through her snorkel. It sounded like whoosh, whoosh. The artist followed, doing a belly flop off the end of the boat. Guided by one of the young fishermen, who was wearing surf shorts with a colorful tropical print and sporting rubber shoes, the three adventurers frolicked with the dolphins as they swam smoothly just below the water's surface. When the dolphins descended, so did their three euphoric companions. When they would twirl around, so would the members of the 5 a.m. club. When they would flirt with one another, so would the entrepreneur and the artist. The experience only lasted about 15 minutes, but it was miraculous.
"That was unbelievable," exuded the artist breathlessly as he emerged from the water and struggled to get back into the boat from the small stage near the motor.
"One of the most amazing experiences of my life," gushed the entrepreneur as she kissed him lavishly. The billionaire soon surfaced. He was hooting with laughter.
"Boy, that was a blast."
On returning to the harbor, the morning mentoring class resumed on the beach, next to a pile of stones that locals used for barbecuing fish. The double rainbow remained extended across the sweeping sky. The billionaire lifted a hand toward the heavens. Four white doves appeared abruptly, out of nowhere. Then a cluster of pink and yellowish butterflies sailed by.
"Good,"
announced the tycoon as he stared at them. After letting out a few throaty coughs that also seemed to come out of nowhere, he proceeded to point to the third area of the four focuses of history makers model he'd been walking his two students through on this particular day. It had personal mastery practice printed on it.
"What are we talking about here?"
wondered the artist, his dreadlocks dripping and his thick tattooed arms around the entrepreneur to keep her warm. She was shivering.
"Training the best parts of you," was the straightforward reply.
"Remember the Spartan warrior credo that the spellbinder shared at the seminar? Sweat more in practice, bleed less in war. Well, the quality of your morning practice determines the caliber of your daily performance. Battles are won in the early light of intense training, when no one's watching. Victories occur before warriors walk onto the field. Triumph belongs to the one who prepares the most. It's obvious that if you want to be the best in the world at business or art or chess, or as a designer, or as a mechanic, or as a manager, you need to put in enormous amounts of practice time to advance your expertise. Specifically, a performer must invest at least 2 hours and 44 minutes of daily improvement on their chosen skill for 10 years, as preeminent psychologist Anders Ericsson of Florida State University has taught us through his groundbreaking research. This is the minimum viable amount of practice required for the first signs of genius to appear within any domain. Yet so few of us think of the importance of putting what amounts to 10,000 hours of training into becoming better human beings. And that's why so few among us unlock that code, which, once cracked, liberates our sovereign selves with all the wisdom,
creativity, bravery, love, and inner peace that comes with that manifestation. It's only when we improve that our lives improve. Know what I mean? What I'm suggesting to you two is that you need to practice advancing toward personal mastery daily, just as we must dedicate ourselves to any other skill we seek to be world-class at. Fortify and bulletproof, and nourish the core dimensions of your inner life, and trust me, you'll times 100 your life. Everything you do in your outer world is an absolute consequence of what's happening within you. This is where you need to do the real morning preparation. Then you'll walk out in the world every day, thinking, feeling, and producing at levels that make you unconquerable. You owe this gift to yourself. I've never believed much in self-improvement before the Spellbinders Conference, stated the entrepreneur flatly. It's never seemed real to me. Have you ever tried it? I mean, seriously practiced it over an extended period of time? Asked the billionaire firmly. Yet another dove flew overhead, and when the mogul glanced up at the sun, it almost appeared that the clouds parted. Not really, admitted the entrepreneur. Until now, until I joined the 5 a.m. club. Okay, good. So, let's keep going. Here's the key, said the billionaire. During your victory hour, from 5 to 6 a.m. each morning, concentrate on upgrading what the Spellbinder calls the four interior empires. This will be the smartest and sometimes the most difficult work you will ever do in your life, deeply working on you, cultivating the four central inner arenas that I'll walk you through in a moment, is your golden key to transformation. It won't be easy, I need to reinforce that, but it will be totally worth it. Why? Wondered the entrepreneur. She'd stopped shaking from the cold water of the Indian Ocean, but the artist still held her. His dreadlocks still dripped, and the renegade rooster still crowed. Because inner empires need to be unfolded up to world class before you'll ever see outer ones, and your fortune always follows your fearlessness. Powerful insight, cats. Your influence in the world mirrors the glory, nobility, vitality, and luminosity you've accessed in yourself. Very few people in this time of superficiality and human creatures behaving like artificial machines remember this essential life truth. External always expresses internal. Without always reflects within. Your creativity, productivity, prosperity, performance, and impact on the planet are always a sublime expression of what's going on inside of you. For example, if you lack faith in your ability to get your ambitions done, you'll never achieve them. If you don't feel deserving of abundance, you'll never do what's required to realize it. And if your drive to capitalize on your genius is weak, your fire to train is dim, and your stamina to optimize is low, it's clear you'll never take flight into the rare air of outright mastery and realize domain dominance. External always expresses internal. And to experience empires in your outer life, you need to develop your inner ones first, reinforced the billionaire. He started to sip from a bottle of green-colored liquid that one of the fishermen had given him when he hopped out of the motorboat. If you looked very closely at the text printed on the glass, you'd read these words of Mahatma Gandhi. The only devils in the world are those running in our own hearts. That is where the battle should be fought. As you consistently increase the inherent power inside you, Mr. Riley continued, you'll actually begin to see an alternate reality, flush with gorgeous opportunity and luxurious possibility. You'll play in a universe of the marvelous that members of the majority can't even perceive, because their eyes are blinded by doubt, disbelief, and fear. Greatness is an inside game, the billionaire affirmed as he drew yet another learning model into the sand. You'll find the four interior empires diagram reproduced on the enhancement. Okay, let's go granular on this framework so you cats have a high and ultra-clear awareness of what aspects of your inner life to improve during your victory hour. I'll provide you with the complete morning routine to run soon, when I teach the 20-20-20 formula. For now, please just know that there are 4 interior empires to train, cultivate, and iterate before the sun comes up. Mindset, heartset, healthset, and soulset. Together, these 4 private arenas form the foundation of the true primal power that rests inside every human being alive today. Most of us have disowned and discredited this formidable force as we've spent our days pursuing things outside ourselves. But we all have this profound and illustrious capacity within us. And the best time to optimize your 4 interior empires is from 5 to 6 a.m. That's the most special time of the day. Own your morning and you'll elevate your life, encouraged the tycoon. Oh, a question? What if I only want to do this 5 days a week and take weekends off? How strict is this whole 5 a.m. method? Asked the entrepreneur.
An ancient dog shuffled by, and the song Occhi by Italian music legend Zucchero could be heard playing from the fish restaurant. You would probably have found that part of the scene quite strange, but it really did happen this way.
It's your life. Do what fits you best and feels right to you. What I'm revealing is the information the Spellbinder shared with me. It caused me to make my fortune and helped me find a consummate sense of daily joy and ongoing peace. Really, all of this gave me personal freedom. Apply it all in whatever way works for your values, aspirations, and lifestyle. Yet also know that part-time commitment truly does deliver part-time results, stated the billionaire as he turned to catch a fly with his fist.
Could you please go deeper into the 4 interior empires? The entrepreneur asked. This piece you're teaching us will really help me become a lot stronger in my fight with those investors and get even more of my hope, happiness, and confidence back. I haven't told you this, but over these past days since I met you, I've been applying so much of what you've been so generous to share with us. As I'm sure you saw, at first I resisted a lot of the Spellbinder's philosophies. I really didn't want to go to his seminar, you know. But at least I was open to his and your teachings. Desperately open. I love life, you know, and I now plan to live a long time.
Good, the artist said as he picked up a heart-shaped seashell and placed it tenderly into a palm of the entrepreneur. He closed her fingers around it and pressed her hand to his chest.
I'm already noticing some significant improvements, the entrepreneur went on. By rising at 5, I feel more focused, less stressed, more secure, and way more energetic. I have a larger sense of perspective over all the aspects of my life. I'm becoming more grateful for all the positive in my world, a lot less concerned with the attack on my company, and a lot more excited about my future. Look, those investors are bad guys, and I'm not ready to handle them yet. I will, though. But the fear I felt around the whole thing, and the dark sense of hopelessness about it all, well, that's faded.
Neato, said the billionaire,
using the vintage slang of hipsters of a bygone era. He then changed his t-shirt on the beach. The SUV had returned, and the driver was parked directly in front of the seafood restaurant.
And you're wise, the billionaire added. All this information is priceless, but as you're finding, it's the ceaseless practice and daily application of it that will make you a heroic human being and an inspirational leader in business and a worldwide uplifter of many. And I congratulate you for letting go of your past. No one's suggesting you act irresponsibly and not deal with the issue you're facing at your firm. But your past is a place to be learned from, not a home to be lived in.
The 3 friends climbed into the waiting vehicle, and it pushed ahead to return to the estate of the eclectic host.
So, let's talk more about this learning model, because it is so crucial to your success and happiness, the billionaire commented as the SUV sailed along. Many gurus speak of mindset. They teach the importance of installing the psychology of possibility. To use Harvard psychologist Ellen Langer's phrase, they coach you to think optimistic thoughts every day. These teachers tell you that your thinking forms your reality, and that by improving your mind, you'll improve your life. For sure, Calibrating your mindset is an essential move to make toward the personal mastery that will then lead to a legendary outer reality. Yet, the billionaire continued, and it's incredibly important that you two understand this because most people don't, the Spellbinder taught me that elevating your mindset, the first of the four interior empires, is only 25% of the personal mastery equation.
Seriously? The artist asked. I always thought that our thinking determines everything, that there wasn't much more to it than that. The whole change your thinking and you'll change your life, and your attitude determines your altitude kind of thing.
Look, said the billionaire, it's definitely true that your deepest beliefs drive your daily behavior. You know I believe that. And you know I also agree that the way you perceive the world drives the way you perform in it. Yet, a superbly developed mindset without a magnificently purified heart set is a hollow triumph. Just working on your mindset will never deliver the fullness of your sovereignty and fully express your resident genius, the industrialist said with great clarity.
I think I'm getting you, noted the artist with a grin the size of Mount Kilimanjaro. Charles Bukowski said, stop insisting on clearing your head. Clear your heart instead.
He was right, agreed the billionaire as he relaxed deeper into his rich leather seat in the SUV. So help me understand exactly what heart set is, asked the entrepreneur. She was watching a group of school kids running in a playground with unsparing exhilaration. Her thoughts drifted to her childhood. Heart set is your emotional life. Even with battle-proofed beliefs and the distinguished thinking of a world-class mindset, you won't win if your heart is full of anger, sadness, disappointment, resentment, and fear. Just think about it. How can you produce amazing work and realize astonishing results if toxic feelings are weighing you down? It seems like everyone's talking about building a healthy and undefeatable mindset these days. You hear it everywhere. But no one's speaking of heart set, or health set and soul set. All four of these interior empires must be polished beautifully through morning practice for you to know the awe-inspiring power that lurks within you. And it's only when you grow and deepen your relationship with this natural authority that exists at your core that you can ascend into the company of the virtuosos and the gods. As you elevate your four interior empires, you'll begin to achieve success in the external world at a level you've never believed you could achieve, and more elegantly than you've ever imagined. It's as if you've developed the capabilities of a magic worker. You start to increase the power of others by your very presence, an improbable yet consistently reliable stream of miracles will infuse your common hours, and a prolific joyfulness born of brilliant accomplishment and worldwide service will come to you as life's reward for the admirable ways you've behaved. Mr. Riley looked out of the vehicle's window. He then continued his discourse. So many of us know what we should do mentally, but nothing extraordinary ever happens because our emotional life remains a mess. We stay stuck in the past. We haven't forgiven the unforgiven. We've repressed all those unhealthy emotions from all that has hurt us. Sigmund Freud wrote that unexpressed emotions will never die. They are buried alive, and they will come forth later in uglier ways. And we wonder why our attempts at positive thinking aren't working. What I'm sharing with you explains why so many self-improvement books don't lead to lasting evolution, and why so few conferences make an enduring difference. Our intellectual intentions are good. We really wish to become brighter producers and better people. But we merely get the information at the level of thought. And then we sabotage our lofty aspirations with the residue of our broken hearts. So nothing shifts. So nothing increases. So nothing transforms. If you want to experience exponential growth and unparalleled performance, you need to dial in a masterful mindset, but also repair, rebuild, and reinforce a winning heart set, so that all the dark and toxic emotion from your past pains are cleared out, released, and cleansed and purified forever, And so your heart, once hardened by life's trials, reopens in all its noble glory. Amazing insights, the entrepreneur acknowledged. But how exactly do I do this during my